Wednesday night, you know what that means. It's time for your AEW Dynamite review here for Wednesday, January 20th, 2021. I am the Sala Monster. This was not a great show tonight. This was a very mixed bag. Not everything on the show was bad, but not a real fan of this show tonight. And I gotta say, you know, Chris Jericho, a lot's been said about Chris Jericho. All the NBA fans piled on him a few weeks ago. I'm watching the main event tonight. It is the Inner Circle Tag Team Challenge. Jericho teaming up with MJF against Santana and Ortiz against Sammy Hagar, which I gotta say, I love that name. And Jericho goes for a Lion's Salt. Now, every time I see Jericho go for the Lion's Salt, I kind of hold my breath a little bit anyway. Because every time I see that move, part of my brain thinks back to that horrible accident many years ago with Hayabusa, who landed directly on top of his head and was paralyzed and never wrestled again. He walked many years later, but that was the end of his career. And, you know, Jericho's gotten older. Jericho has physically gotten heavier. I don't think anybody can dispute that. Jericho is not in the shape he was in even 5 years ago, let alone 10 or 15 years ago, 20 years ago, when he was doing the Lion's Salt all over the place in every match. And he basically landed on his face. Looked a little shaken up when he hit the move on Sammy. Sammy kicked out. Jericho was a little slow to get up. And it was a scary moment. And it's one of those things where maybe he's got to reevaluate whether or not it would be wise to use that move in every match. I know it's part of his arsenal of moves. Like John Cena has his five moves. Jericho has his seven. That's one of the seven. He's used it for a long time. But man, that was a scary moment because my mind goes back all those years. My mind goes back to that horrible accident. I don't want to see the same thing happen to him. He's not the same young man he used to be. And again, he is not physically as light as he once was. That was scary. I think he's okay, but that was very scary. He was very off in that match, though. It wasn't just the Lion's Salt spot. He was very slow. He was very off. Sammy Guevara, I thought, was the MVP of that main event. If there was one really great thing about the main event, I got to give Jake Hager his props. I thought Hager looked good. But Sammy Guevara was the MVP in that main event, which we will get into as we go along. Jericho, not so much. Looking very, I don't want to say lethargic, I just think the lifestyle, age, everything might just be catching up with him a little too much. I'm noticing it more and more and more in his matches. So, but that wasn't the only thing I didn't like about the show. Just it felt like there was a lot of filler. They did move some stories along. I do enjoy the fact that they're pushing Private Party. Now it looks like as heels, I think that's going to give them the edge. Or an edge, I think, that they've been lacking. So I kind of like that. I want to hear from you. What do you guys think of the show tonight? It's going to be a very interesting Twitter poll when we get to that a little bit later on. Usually Dynamite is doing 80-20, and NXT is doing 65-35. I suspect the numbers might look a little bit different. Unless I'm on an island all on my own, I suspect the numbers might be a little bit different tonight. All warm and fuzzy here on a cold winter night in New York. You know, it was snowing earlier here in New York. Big flakes, too. It's like, motherfucker, are you kidding me? Then it tapered off. It's going to be cold. I suspect it's very cold in Florida, only because Jim Ross sounded drunk tonight, and I don't think he, well, I who knows, but I know he likes the Moscow Mules. Tony Schiavone also, he was kind of feeling his oats a little bit tonight. Jim Ross, though, it almost sounded like his face was from the cold, that maybe it was impacting his voice tonight. He sounded a little weird, a little strange. I don't know what the temperature was in Jacksonville, but I suspect that might have had something to do with it. Oh, I wanted to say this, too. I noticed in the front row during the show, actually, I noticed it in the main event. You know how they have the AEW Dark wrestlers hanging out in the front row. And I noticed that the Man of Steel himself, Mike Verna, front row there on Dynamite tonight. He's been getting a couple of matches here and there on Dark in recent weeks, and I'm really happy to see it. He's a good dude. I was watching his independent matches when he was doing independent shows here in Brooklyn in front of 150 people. Even then, this is years ago. I was watching him going, how is this guy not on WWE's radar? I mean, there was no AEW at the time. Now AEW is giving him some attention. I'm surprised it took this long. He's got the look. He's talented. He should be on the radar of all these companies. And I know he's had a few dark matches, but to see him on Dynamite tonight in the audience was really cool. That's a name you got to keep in mind, Mike Verna. You're going to be hearing more about him. But the show opened tonight with a birthday bash, birthday celebration for Negative One, Brody Lee Jr. Today was his 9th birthday. And so the Dark Order brings out Brody Lee Jr. They have a table on stage already prepared. There's a cake. Now, if you're going to have a cake on a wrestling show, you know someone's face is going into it. Come on. It's like having a wrestling wedding, you know? You know, the weddings are never going to go off without a hitch. The wedding that we're going to get in 2 weeks at Beach Break, I don't think it's going to be Kip Sabian and Penelope Ford exchanging their vows and driving off and nothing else happens, right? So you kind of expect these things. Just a matter of whose face was going to go into the cake. Then I saw Luther. So as they're singing Happy Birthday to Negative One, out comes Luther and Serpentico, Chaos Project. Chaos Project? I almost said Chaos Theory. I think it's Chaos Project. As soon as I saw Luther on Dynamite, I knew. This fucking guy's face is going into the cake. Because why else would Luther be on Dynamite? I know he's been, you know, doing stuff on Dark, and I think he had an interaction the other night with Negative One. So there's Luther, and Luther's not very happy. He says AEW was turned into a daycare center. Says, we don't like kids, and we don't like you. So the Dark Order attacks. TH2 comes out, because they're part of this opening match. So here's Jack Evans, here's Angelico. Brawl breaks out, Hangman Page comes out. Does a dive off the stage onto the pile of bodies down below. And it was Hangman Page, John Silver, Alex Reynolds, and Colt Cabana of the Dark Order taking on Jack Evans, Angelico, Luther, and Serpentico. Daniela in the chat says Jericho and Luther should not be wrestling. Luther has his gig in AEW because of Jericho. Luther's been around forever. Remember Jericho, they even put him, well, he didn't put him over, but they were in the main event. He put Luther in the main event a few months ago. That was all just a favor to Chris Jericho. Because Luther does not belong in the main event any more than Breezango belonged in the main event last week on NXT. I said my piece about that on Sunday. You want to know why that main event on NXT last week died a death in the ratings? Yeah, because you got Breezango in your main event. Some guys just shouldn't be in the main event. But Luther, at least, he was not in the main event. He was in the opener this week. Hangman, you know, this is another thing on the show tonight. And look, I understand that shit happens, right? They're not robots, but it felt like in every single match, there was some kind of a botch or some kind of sloppiness involved. Hangman Page, he botched the kip up. That doesn't happen very often. Went for the Shawn Michaels kip up. He botched it. He tried to cover for it. Gave the finger wag and said, no, no. Went for a dive out over the top rope. Nobody was there, though. He was a house of fire. Hangman Page otherwise looked good. Hit all of his big moves. Reynolds and Silver, they at one point got on Hangman's back. And Hangman had them all on his back and then just fell backwards on top of Serpentico for a near fall. So the heels got the heat on Reynolds, because remember, the Dark Order now, they are baby faces. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. There really was no other way to continue on with the Dark Order if you're going to put them right back on TV. They have to be baby faces, at least for a while. And so they were the baby faces here in this match. They got the heat on Reynolds. Jack Evans hit a springboard 450 for a near fall. Hangman powerbombed Evans into the crowd, threw him into the first row and the second row. So Luther sets up for a powerbomb on Colt Cabana. He's going to powerbomb Cabana onto the table with the birthday cake on stage. So he's going to powerbomb him, and Colt Cabana slips out, rather, after negative one, hits Luther with a kendo stick. This kid is a menace with that stick. Hits him with the kendo stick. And Luther ends up falling face first. Now, I'm not sure if the table was supposed to break. You know, his face was obviously going to go into the cake. Was the table supposed to break? Well, if it was, it didn't. But we got the cake in the face, which you knew was coming. And a pretty cool finish here. Buckshot. I call it the Buckshot German. Buckshot German. And Reynolds with the jackknife pin for the win. It's a very cool finish. So you've got John Silver with the opponent in position for a German suplex. At the same time that Hangman Page vaults himself into the ring for the Buckshot Lariat. He hits the Lariat. And Silver takes the guy over for the German. In comes Reynolds with the jackknife pin. That's a cool finish. And I was just thinking to myself, because there's been a lot of chatter about trios titles, and Tony Khan has said that, you know, at some point there likely will be trios belts. That was one of my predictions when I did the prediction show. I mean, I've been talking about trios belts for a while. I enjoyed the way they were used in Lucha Underground. They have so many freaking stables, and I mean, they, honestly, if we're being honest here, they have far too many. Multiple man matches, whether it's 6-man tags, 8-man tags, 12-man tags, they go overboard with it, but they have so many groups, they have so many factions in this company, you almost have to, at some point soon, introduce those belts, and if they do, that's the kind of finish that should win a trios title. That was very cool. So after the match, back on stage, negative one hits Serpentico right in the head, right between the eyes with the kendo stick. And then he turns to his fellow Dark Order members and he scolds them because these morons are celebrating his birthday. Meanwhile, he says his birthday was 3 days ago. So a little bit of his dad in negative one. He tossed the papers into, like his dad used to do, the papers into Serpentico's face. So off to the back goes negative one. Okay, nice little birthday celebration. I thought it was a very nice thing for them to do. Okay, you're not going to have the kid on the show every week, but this is his first birthday without his father. Again, he and his family are going through a very difficult time. In fact, I've got the Brody Lee tribute shirt on right now that Pro Wrestling Tees is selling. All proceeds go to the Huber family. It's a really cool shirt. Came the other day, took a few weeks. But they're going through a tough time right now. And they're going to be for a while, but this all happened around the Christmas holidays, New Year. The kid's turning 9 years old. His dad just died. So I don't mind them, you know, putting him back on TV and doing a segment like this. I thought it was a very nice thing for them to do. He went to the back. And remember, last week, the Dark Order said to Hangman, are you going to join with us? And Hangman said he would give them an answer next week. Well, now it's next week. And John Silver was on the mic. He was all excited. They thought for sure that Hangman was going to join them. Will you join the Dark Order? Ask them point blank. Will you join the Dark Order? And Hangman is contemplating this and teasing it out and teasing it out. Finally, he starts to say no, basically, is his answer. But as he goes to answer, they jump the gun. We see a message up on the screen. He said yes. We hear celebratory music, and out through one of the tunnels is this group of shirtless, masked cowboys. Once they hear his answer, though, Stu Grayson and all of them, they're kicking these guys, go back, and they cut the music off. And Hangman just explains, he says, look, you know, I've done the group thing before. Hasn't really worked out too well for me. I'm so sorry. He was very apologetic. And then he grabbed the bottle of Jack that Stu Grayson was holding. He took the Jack and he walked to the back. So it does not appear that Hangman Page is going to join the Dark Order. Doesn't mean that they're not still going to try to recruit him. I would not mind if they, whether they make him the leader or he just kind of links up with them, because Hangman Page right now, and this is a problem with Cody as well. I'm going to talk about Cody in a second. He's a man without any real direction because he can't compete for the championship with Omega, even though there's a natural story there. The timing just isn't right. And he's not going to go challenge Darby Allin for the TNT title because he needs to have his run. He's got to have his babyface run with the belt. You're not going to turn Hangman. So he's kind of stuck right now in this purgatory. The Dark Order, given what happened, is now this babyface group that nobody expected. And so I think if you wanted to just kind of link him up with the group for a few months at least, I don't see anything wrong with that. I would not have said that a few months ago. I would have looked at that as a huge downgrade for him. But what else is there for him to do? I mean, really, you can do one-off feuds with him. Maybe I could think of a couple of people you can maybe feud him with. But none of that really seems overly sexy to me as far as the options that are available to him. So I don't think this is the end of the story. And part of me really hopes that he does end up joining the group. You know, if they introduce Trios titles, hey, he could be a Trios champion as a member of the Dark Order. It could happen. It could happen. Thank you, guys. I see some super chats already came in. Hey, Ryan Spies, you were number one. You were number one for tonight. It says, Luther cut the promo of the year. I don't know about that. Well, the year has been short. What are we, 2 weeks into the year? 3 weeks? 3 weeks. All right, maybe. It hasn't been a very long year yet. I mean, it kind of feels like it, some of the shit that's gone down in the last few weeks. But I don't know that I would agree. And Nayef, thank you, man, for the $15. That is awesome. Always good to hear from Nayef. So up next, we had Tony Schiavone. Tony Schiavone was in the ring, and he was getting ready to introduce his favorite wrestler, Sting. Nobody marks out more for Sting than Tony Schiavone, or the one guy who super chatted me, I forget who it was, a few weeks ago, who said that Sting feels fresh, cool, and hip ever since he came into AEW. I don't know what that guy's drinking. But in the ring, introducing Sting. Sting comes down to the ring. And following Sting is Darby Allin. And I know there were some people who were kind of upset. Some of the AEW fans can't take a joke, and they were upset, you know, about the thumbnail. Darby is Sting Jr. Well, he kind of is. I mean, come on, he's got the face paint. Sting's been watching over him now, lording over him for weeks. It feels like Sting and Sting Jr. But they promoted this as Sting congratulating Darby on his big TNT title victory over Brian Cage, retained the title last week. Sting says that there's something in Darby that reminds him of himself, which really, outside of the fact that he paints his face and he sits up in the rafters, what else is similar between Sting and Darby Allin? I don't know. I think that's pretty much it. Physically, anyway, I don't really see any other similarities. And he wanted to come out, he wanted to congratulate him on retaining the TNT title and being the champion. He says, look, I wasn't there to interfere. I was only there to make sure that Darby got a fair shake. And then we hear Taz's voice, and Taz is telling Sting to shut up. Just shut up. Doesn't want to hear him. Says, you guys fight dirty. You guys fight street style. He goes, you're talking to a group of street fighters. You want to fight dirty? You want to fight street? We can fight street. And Darby says, you want to take it to the streets? He goes, be careful what you wish for because it might just happen. And that was it. Sting, I say it again, Sting has the best job in the world. It used to be Brock Lesnar. Now Brock Lesnar has no job. Brock Lesnar don't need no job. Brock Lesnar's got more money than God. He doesn't have to work another day in his life. His kids, his grandkids, they're all going to be well taken care of, probably with all the money that Brock Lesnar has made. And he's off in the wilderness somewhere. I saw a picture of him recently. He got a funny hat on. He got a big bushy beard. But now he's unemployed. So I say that Sting has the best gig in wrestling. I'm sure he's getting paid very well. Because you know Sting didn't come into AEW without getting paid well. All right? He's not there because of the passion for the business. Let's be honest. He's a businessman. So I'm sure he's making bank. And yeah, I mean, they're putting him on the show every week, which I think is stupid. He shouldn't be on the show every week. But he comes out, the snow falls, most of the time he doesn't even say a word. He just looks, he points, he puts his bat out there. Then the other weeks when he speaks for 2 minutes and he goes to the back. This was a short segment. They made their point. They got in, they got out, but he didn't do much. He said a couple of lines and that was it. That was it. And so now it looks like we're setting up for Sting's first cinematic match. I remember when I did the prediction show a few weeks ago. My prediction for Sting was he'll have three cinematic matches in 2021. And the first one would be a tag match. It would be him and Darby Allin as partners, not opponents or enemies. Him and Darby team up against Team Taz. And that was probably the most obvious of them, but it looks like that is going to be coming true very soon. Now, the other two I said is after this one, Sting and Jericho, because Jericho's not going to be able to resist. Jericho, I don't believe, has ever wrestled Sting before. If they did, it wasn't like a big pay-per-view match or anything. You know that Jericho is going to want to work a match with Sting. Cinematic, whatever kind of match. So we're going to get that. We're going to get Jericho and Sting. And I think we'll get Sting and Cody. So those are, I think those are going to be the three. I think it's going to be Sting and Darby against Team Taz. Now it looks that way. Sting and Jericho, Sting and Cody. That's my prediction. But if they're going to make it cinematic style, it's the safest way to put Sting in a match. And he doesn't have to take bumps or big bumps. It's like the Boneyard match, right? Undertaker, at this stage of his life, is going to be more limited physically in what he can do than he would have been even a few years ago. He said the hardest part of that match was just the standing around outside in the cold. Because instead of just having a match, boom, 20 minutes, you're done. They're out there filming for 6, 7 hours, 8 hours. You start, you stop, you start, you stop. Your body starts to kind of stiffen up a little bit. That might be the biggest issue that Sting runs into. Sting's older than The Undertaker. But It's the safest way to get Sting involved physically. So, only question now is, do they do it at Revolution or do they do it on some kind of themed TV special? I think for this, you know, they got Beach Break coming up in 2 weeks. I would hold off. I mean, if you're going to promote any kind of a match with Sting, it's stupid to not do it on pay-per-view. And you've got a pay-per-view coming up in about 6 weeks. Not even, I think 5 weeks. So I'm guessing that's going to be a Revolution match. Ryan, I think especially with Top Flight kind of taking their spotlight as the new young high-flying team, Private Party really needed that turn. Yeah, they it's going to give them an edge that I think is going to help them out a lot. So there was a meeting among the members of the... or going to be anyway, a meeting among the members of the Elite at Kenny Omega's beach house. This is from earlier in the day. We see the Young Bucks arrive. They're with Alex Marvez. And he apparently, I guess, followed the Bucks to the house. This guy's very annoying. Alex Marvez, he's everywhere. He's the roving reporter. He's always sticking his nose where it doesn't belong. So they're at Kenny's beach house. They're looking for Omega. There's no Omega. There's Michael Nakazawa. Who I guess is he his butler, just like Chuck Taylor? I don't know. He's his butler, his secretary, his sommelier, right? Carmella's guy on SmackDown, the wine guy, the sommelier or champagne guy. Anyway, Nakazawa brings the Bucks into the residence, and they look in the living room, and they cannot believe what they see. And what they see on the wall is an oil painting of Kenny Omega and what appears to be Don Callis. They're both shirtless and they're both ripped. I'm pretty sure, I know Callis has been around for a while, but I'm gonna go ahead and take a guess that at no point in his entire life and his entire career has Don Callis ever looked remotely the way he looked in this oil painting. He had abs ripped to shreds. The Bucks couldn't believe it. So then Callis shows up, and he's trying to explain what happened the week before, that whole miscommunication when the Bucks thought they were going to team with Kenny, and then instead it was the Good Brothers, and they were kind of cut out. And he ends up giving them checks. He's paying them off. He goes, look, you've been very good friends to Kenny now for a very long time, but you're holding him back. And he's really trying to get under their skin. He's saying all kinds of stuff to just kind of piss them off and offend them. And I think at one point, Nakazawa took, he took Marvez to the dungeon or something. Should have kept him down there. But he's trying to pay these guys off. He's trying to pay them off to go away and not be Kenny Omega's friend anymore. And they made a crack about the company that Callis works for, which the Bucks used to work for, and how, you know, the checks, weren't for much money anyway, or they were worthless. So they ripped the check. I gotta say, in this working relationship so far between Impact and AEW, I think Tony Khan is really enjoying himself when he does these segments. We don't see him on Impact, really, or on AEW, but he's a heel. So when he does the paid advertisements, he does a new one every week, him and Tony Schiavone. This past week, it was him and Jerry Lynn. I'm going to talk about that as well. He's really enjoying himself. And what I love about it is they are completely ripping on Impact. And they are throwing every insult out there. Like, every insult you've heard about Impact, as far as them not being able to pay their people on time, not paying a lot. Like, even if that was past regimes, maybe, and not the current one. I don't know if it's the current one or not. But they're getting away with all this stuff. They're constantly shitting on Impact. And it's not even like what they're saying is wrong. They're just shitting on Impact. And I get a nice little laugh out of it, because it reminds me of all the shitty things that Impact has done over the years. All the shitty ways Impact has treated talent over the years. And again, I'm not saying it's all the current regime. A lot of it is the past regime. Impact is, it's a stained, poison brand. The name, it carries a lot of baggage. And so the Bucks rip up the checks, and they're closing in on Callis. And it looks like they're attacking Callis. Callis screams. They cut away. This was all part of a very elaborate setup by Don Callis that would become a little more apparent later in the show. So then we had Cody Rhodes against Peter Avalon. This is one of the parts of the show I did not like. Cody on Twitter said that he would beat Avalon in under 60 seconds, which he should have. For being honest, he should have. And in the first 5 seconds of the match, he hits a crossroads, but he doesn't go for the cover right away. And even the announcers are kind of taking him to task for, why isn't he going for the cover? Before he could even think about going for the cover, out comes Jade Cargill. And she walks out on stage looking she looked very nice. And she stood there the way Chyna used to, when she would just stand there and cross her arms. And you know, she's very tall. She's got those long legs. And she's just standing there. And as Cody is distracted, the referee is distracted, Peter Avalon kicks Cody in the balls. He kicks Cody in the testes. Cody is in pain. And I thought they're going to have Avalon get some kind of cheap win over Cody, but no, it was just, you know, a spot. He took advantage for a while. He was attacking Cody's knee. He was working over his knee. Cody is selling for Peter Avalon like this is some kind of big competitive match. A match that started, by the way, with an outside distraction and a low blow behind the referee's back. And I'm thinking to myself, am I watching Raw? Like, what am I watching here? Bad enough, the Cargill stuff with Cody doesn't make any sense. Now that Brandy isn't around, what the hell is this even still going on for? Now I've got to watch Peter Avalon beating up Cody. Am I watching Dark? What am I watching here? Why is this even a match? So it didn't last very long, but it went on for a few minutes, and he's beating on Cody and hit a superplex at one point. Avalon attempted a moonsault. Cody rolled out of the way, and Cody locks on a figure four leg lock a few minutes later. Avalon reverses. Now he reverses the pressure onto Cody. But then they end up back in normal position, which was very strange because Avalon was no longer selling the move. It was as if they've reversed it back, but it's as if he's kind of moving around like he's the one with the move on Cody. I was a little confused by that. But he slaps Cody. And then he realizes he's made a great mistake. And before Cody could smack him back, I guess part of his gimmick is he doesn't want to get hit in the face. He's like Rick Martel back in 1992. Don't hit me in the face. Rick Martel and Shawn Michaels had a whole match at SummerSlam at Wembley Stadium where you couldn't hit the other guy in the face, which was the fucking dumbest stipulation that you could possibly think of. But that's apparently part of his shtick. When he sees that Cody is about to smack him, he immediately just begins to tap out. Just feverishly begins to tap out. And that was the match. That was the finish to the match. That finish sucked. Now, it may have made sense because of his character. I don't give a shit. That sucked. That finish was terrible. In a match where Avalon got far too much offense, all I could think of watching these two in the ring together, I don't want to make it sound like I'm saying Peter Avalon doesn't have any talent. I'm sure he's got talent. But he has not been positioned as anybody to take seriously on this show. When I look at him, and part of it may just be the gimmick, I think of Damian Sandow. And Damian Sandow has a history with Cody. So I'm looking at this going, whoa, we have like a little Rhodes Scholars reunion here. He's like a mini Damian Sandow. He's physically not as big as Sandow was, but he reminds me a lot of Damian Sandow. And it stuck out to me more often because I think he was in the ring with Cody, and Cody used to be partners with Sandow. But that's all I could think of watching these two in the ring. Cody feels completely directionless right now. It's part of what I was talking about before with Hangman Page. He feels completely directionless, like they have no real plan for him. Brandy announced her pregnancy. Maybe they weren't expecting it, and so now whatever plans they had are gone, or at least on hold, and it's like they don't know what to do with him. They want him to be on TV. He's got this Go Big show. He's coming out now to a remix version of his music that Snoop Dogg, I guess, did for him. So they have to promote his show. They want him on the show. He is one of the biggest stars on the show. But they don't have anything for him. Now, the Cargill thing is still going on, right? She's out there. She's distracting him. And now they've announced that next week, Cody is going to respond to Shaq's comments from a few weeks ago. Shaquille O'Neal, when he was on Dynamite, he had one segment. He was sitting in a chair opposite Brandy, so Cody's wife. And he said nothing. All he said was, I was just playing around. I like Cody. I was just having some fun. He was just having some fun. He didn't mean anything by the banter on social media. And remember, that was the segment that ended with Brandy calling him an overgrown asshole and throwing, I think, water in his face. And he sat there with the stupid look on his face. And that was it. We haven't heard about Shaq. We haven't seen Shaq. But now Cody is going to respond to Shaq's comments. And I'm thinking, what comments? The comments where he admitted he was only just having some fun? Oh, those are fighting words now. Or is he going to go back and respond to what Shaq said 6 weeks ago? I got news for you. It's old news. Nobody cares. They truly don't know what to do with him. It's like Brandy got pregnant. She can't be on TV. She can't wrestle. And they don't know what to do. But I was puzzled when they said that next week he's going to respond to Shaq's comments. What comments? This ended the moment that Shaq said he was just playing around. He was just having fun. That was it. That was the finish. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know, man. I don't know what's going on here. I don't think we're getting a Shaq-Cody match. We're not getting a Shaq-Cody match. There may have been a chance of a mixed tag with Cargill and Shaq against Brandy and Cody, and Shaq maybe does a few spots, but that's out the window now. I can't see Shaq at a singles match. I just can't. All those years of teasing one with Big Show, and they can never pull it off. The closest we got was Shaq was in a battle royal with the Big Show. All those years of teasing a match, Big Show thought it was going to happen, it never happened. Now he's going to come and do a match with Cody. I don't see it. Oz and Glorious, thank you for the $5, man. He says, Kenny's boots. That is it. That is the super chat. Well, there you go. Kenny's boots. Apparently, Oz and Glorious has a Kenny Omega foot fetish. We cut to FTR. This was a pre-taped segment in the back. FTR and Tully Blanchard. Tully says the ratings are out, and FTR is number one. They're number one in the AEW tag team rankings. But he says, we need the belts. It is the only thing that matters. See, you could tell Tully's an old school guy. He talks about the belt being the only thing that matters. It's like something Jim Cornette would say. Championships don't feel as important as they used to. Tully Blanchard, he's an old school guy. He knows what it's about. He knows it should be about the championship. So it makes sense for him to be cutting the promo on their behalf, talking about that. Jurassic Express, they storm in. Jungle Boy is in no mood to play games. He was in a foul mood. And he got right up in FTR's face and he says, look, we're getting sick of this. And he says, being in there last week taught me something about myself. It taught me that I could beat either one of you guys. So Dax Harwood stood up to Jungle Boy and he said, well, I'll take you up on that challenge. And so next week it's going to be one half of the number one ranked tag team, FTR, taking on one half of the number two ranked team, Jurassic Express, which means we get to hear Tarzan Boy next week, which has me very excited. John Moxley, who apparently is writing a book. I don't know if he's got a ghostwriter. I don't know if he's writing. If he's writing it himself, I'd be very interested to read at least one chapter out of this book. He doesn't strike me, but then again, I guess Mankind wrote a fucking book, right? Mick Foley, while he was still Mankind, and his book went to number one on the New York Times bestseller list. So maybe John Moxley will be the next Hemingway or Shakespeare. Wouldn't that be something? John Moxley was in action for the first time since being screwed out of the AEW title against Nick Camerato, who I guess has had a couple of matches on Dark. He is a student of QT Marshall and Dustin Rhodes from the Nightmare Factory. They were rooting him on from the front row. Moxley headbutted Camerato right away, and he went for a running crossbody. Camerato caught him as he was coming off the ropes and slammed him down. I mean, this guy, he got some offense in. Again, it didn't go very long. Went about 3 minutes. Obviously, they were trying to put the guy over in some small way because Dustin's got a new school. He's got his own school now. He's been talking about it on social media. He's very excited. He wants to contribute. He wants to help mold and shape the next generation of wrestlers. So they wanted to give him some screen time on this show. I've never seen the guy before. I mean, he's got an interesting look. Got a little bit of offense, but not too much. Moxley dodged a spear, hit a German suplex. Camerato shrugged off a lariat. Moxley transitioned into a rear naked choke, and he got the win via ref stoppage. Camerato went nighty-night, and that was the end of the match. Moxley took a mic. Moxley is still one of the best promos in wrestling right now. In AEW, they have so many people who are so good on the mic. I wouldn't call him number one. I mean, you've got Eddie Kingston, right? You've got him, Taz. There's a couple of other people, but Moxley is definitely top three or four talkers in the company. I liked a lot of the promo work he did leading up to the Kenny Omega match. Tonight was no exception. Short and to the point, but cut a promo in the ring saying, look, he's having a hard time keeping up with everything going on Dynamite, all the crazy stuff going on with Impact Wrestling and everything. He said, hey, the more necks there are to snap, the better. More necks to snap, more backs to break. And he says, look, Kenny can bring all of his buddies from Japan, Mexico, Nashville, or wherever, because all roads in wrestling run through him. Drops the mic, does some push-ups, because why not? So John Moxley, his grand return here tonight on Dynamite, Speaking of great talkers, we go to the back. We have Dasha with Eddie Kingston. And Eddie Kingston is going to be wrestling Lance Archer on TV next week. He's talking about the match. In come Jake Roberts and Lance Archer. Archer, I like this segment. This segment I liked because it was brief, but Archer interrupts. Kingston and Archer are arguing back and forth in a way that if this were two guys who really were kind of going at each other, like you would find these two guys on a street corner in New York yelling at each other, this is what it would have looked like. And Archer was going off on Kingston, ashes to ashes, dust to dust, everybody dies. Kingston said, you know what, you and me next week, I won't even bring my boys with me. Jake Roberts got Archer out of there, and then Jake looks at Kingston, he goes, bite me. This shirt that Jake is wearing, he's wore it now for a few weeks. I guess it's supposed to be like a snakeskin print. I don't know. It's not the best look, I gotta say. But I guess the whole snakeskin thing, I guess it kind of works for him, I suppose. Tenorio says the show was okay, could have been better. Yeah, I would agree. Not a great show overall tonight. So Kenny Omega was at the building. He was not at his beach house earlier, but he was at the building. He was interviewed by this, there he is again, Alex Marvez. This guy's everywhere. He's like a fucking rash. You can't get rid of this guy. So he wants to know, what's the deal? You know, the Bucks went to your home earlier. We were at your home. Kenny is mortified by this. Can I get no privacy anymore? Now you're invading my home? You're invading my privacy? And he goes and he finds Don Callis in the locker room, and they did this makeup job on Don to make it look like, you know, someone punched him in the eye and punched him in the face. And Kenny sees this. He goes, what happened? Who did this? You tell me who did this and I'll take care of it. And Callis is being very disingenuous, like he doesn't want to tell Omega, and then he accidentally lets it slip. It was Nick and Matt. You know, he's trying to drive a wedge between the Bucks and Kenny Omega, because that's what Don Callis is. Don Callis is a snake. He is a classic heel manager. He is a snake. It is the perfect role for him. He is a slimy, terrible human being. And he's trying to drive a wedge between these friends. Matt Hardy and Private Party against Matt Sydal and Top Flight. So, we have to give some background on what happened on Impact last night. Matt Hardy and Private Party made a surprise appearance on Impact Wrestling last night. We had the Good Brothers on Impact. They came out. And now, this was the fallout from the Hard to Kill pay-per-view. The Impact pay-per-view was last weekend. It was Kenny Omega and the Good Brothers beating Rich Swann, Chris Sabin, and Moose. And I put that over pretty well on the podcast on Sunday. Moose was the biggest surprise to me. Moose, this was like the best Moose match I've ever seen. And Moose was only in there as a replacement for Alex Shelley, who couldn't fly to Nashville and make the show. And I felt like Moose ended up stealing the show. So they had a very good match. But, you know, the Bullet Club members got the win. So they were out here, the Good Brothers were, to talk about their win. Chris Sabin came out. He said, look, you know, my team, we want a rematch. We never lost the belts. Good Brothers said that, look, Alex Shelley is still out. And this brought out James Storm making his Impact return. I don't know if this is a long-term return or just a temporary thing. James Storm comes out. And this brings out Matt Hardy making his Impact return and Private Party making their Impact debut. So they were on the show last night. They wanted to face the Impact Tag Team Champions, and the Good Brothers had a different suggestion. They said, look, why don't you guys, Private Party, why don't you guys take on Chris Sabin and James Storm, and the winners will face us for the Impact Tag Team titles. So we had a main event. Tony Khan and Jerry Lynn were at Impact. They didn't just do a prepaid advertisement. They were on the show. This was, if you've ever seen the Memphis footage from 93, when Vince McMahon and Pat Patterson came to Memphis, Vince was just relishing it. He was relishing being a heel long before the Mr. McMahon character was born. And he went to one show. He went to one show in Memphis. He sat ringside. Because the Tony Khan stuff reminds me what he's been doing, reminds me a lot of what Vince McMahon was doing with the USWA promotion in 93. Well, now he showed up. It was like he was playing the part of Vince McMahon and Jerry Lynn was playing the part of Pat Patterson. And they took a seat at ringside for the main event. They wanted to observe. They wanted to watch the main event. So for the finish, Sabin was going to the top rope when Jerry Lynn, who was ringside, he gets up and he holds on to the feet. And this allowed Private Party to win with the Gin and Juice finish. So, Private Party, they are the number one contenders now for the Impact Tag Team titles, which was mentioned on commentary tonight, but now you know how it all went down. Because I'm guessing that 9 out of 10 of you did not watch Impact, do not have any interest in watching Impact, so I will keep you updated on any important stuff that happens. Now you know the only important stuff that you need to know. Now you're all caught up. Now you know who the number one contenders are. Now, as far as this match here, this was a mess at times. There was some cool stuff in here, but this was a bit of a mess. Very sloppy at different times. Some awkward spots here. But it served a purpose. I was not really a huge fan of the match itself. It served a purpose. The purpose was to show a more aggressive side of Private Party and to begin what is going to be a heel turn for Mark Quinn and Isaiah Cassidy. Remember, a few weeks ago, Matt Hardy wanted them to use a chair. They were in a match together, and Matt wanted Mark Quinn to use a steel chair on their opponent. Mark Quinn said, no, not going to do it. He refused to do it. Pure babyface move. Going to play by the rules. Well, where did that ever get people, right? Playing by the fucking rules. Even Hulk Hogan, the big babyface, biggest babyface of all time. Even Hulk Hogan knew enough not to follow the rules, because if you watch early Hulk Hogan matches, all he ever did was rake people's eyes and scratch their backs. This guy was a fucking heel from day one. He was smart enough to know that. It took Matt Hardy here to smarten up Private Party. Not anymore, though. They're not playing by the rules anymore. They were very, way more aggressive tonight. That was really the story of this match. You hear it on commentary. They were very surprised by how aggressive these guys were being. And for the finish, Isaiah Cassidy used the chair on Dante Martin. Referee didn't see it, but he used the chair. He buried it in his ribs. They were up on the ropes, getting ready for a move. Hit him with the chair, Mark Quinn, and they looked at each other too. So Cassidy is on the floor. Mark Quinn is on the top rope. They're looking at each other, and now they're smiling. Now they're laughing. They're on the same page. And Mark Quinn hits a shooting star splash for the win. And again, it looked like his leg caught the rope. Again, there was some sloppiness in this match. There's sloppiness in every match on this show. It felt like there was more than usual. I'm amazed nobody got hurt. Private Party picks up the win, them and Matt Hardy. After the match, Matt Sydal comes over. He's like, what's going on with you guys? He can't believe that they would cheat to win. This is not like you guys. What are you doing? And Private Party assaults them, beats all the baby faces up. Matt Hardy is watching on. He's very pleased. Hits a twist of fate on Sydal and on Darius Martin. I like the move. I think turning them heel is the right way to go. It's going to give them an edge that they've been missing. And so I think it's going to be a good move for them. Match itself, though, not a fan. Quizzical One says, sloppy shop Dynamite tonight. Yes, tonight was a sloppy shop on Dynamite. We had legit Layla Hirsch against Penelope Ford. This was supposed to be Hirsch against Nyla Rose. Nyla Rose was bumped off the show earlier in the week due to a COVID exposure. So they didn't want to take any chances, so she was replaced by Penelope Ford. Miro and Kip Sabian, they were ringside with their new butler, Charles Taylor. Charles Taylor. After Chuck Taylor's loss last week, now he has to be the butler. Right out of Seinfeld. It's a storyline right out of a Seinfeld episode that they did many years ago. So he has to be the butler now up until the wedding in a few weeks. The wedding is only 2 weeks away. I have to say, he cleans up nicely. He had the tuxedo. He had the bow tie. He had the white serving towel over his wrist like he was a fucking waiter. I actually thought this was a pretty enjoyable match. I like this match. Layla Hirsch is fun to watch. She's very small. So the things that she's able to do are that much more impressive. If you had somebody who was 5'5" or 5'7" doing some of the moves, it's like, all right, we've seen that before. The fact that she is so small makes, when she does, for example, muscle someone up for a German, makes it look impressive. And she did that here in this match, in fact. I think it was late in the match. It was a deadlift. Deadlift German to Penelope Ford for an airfall. She hit a moonsault on Kip Sabian and Miro on the floor, did Layla Hirsch. And she landed a pump kick on, or a Ford did, pump kick on Hirsch as she got back into the ring. Now, Kip Sabian, I think, for the finish, and here's more sloppiness. Kip Sabian was supposed to, I think, push Layla's leg off the rope so the referee wouldn't see it, but I think he was late. He kind of got botched a little bit. Again, story of the show. We had a lot of this up and down the card tonight, I'm sorry to say. So after the match, Miro gets in the ring and he forces Chuck Taylor to tell Orange Cassidy, who is sitting in the audience, that he, being Miro, is his new best friend. This is just lame, stupid nonsense. And Chuck Taylor, of course, he's very reluctant. Oh, I don't, you know, I really don't want to do that. Oh. But in the end, he does it. He says, Miro is my best friend now. And I'm just watching this and I'm thinking, what happens if he doesn't do it? Why does he feel like he has to do it? I mean, I can suspend my disbelief with the idea that he agreed to a match stipulation that said if he lost, he's got to be this guy's butler. And he comes out there and he's looking like the guy Alfred from fucking Batman. He's out there, okay? It's bad enough. He looks like an idiot in this getup, right? He looks like a waiter standing outside of the ring. What's he waiting on? The fact that he felt compelled to say, Miro is my best friend now. What if Chuck Taylor would have said, go fuck yourself, Miro? Or just didn't say it at all and just walked off. What happens to him? Does he lose his job? Tony Khan is going to fire him. He's going to be on the unemployment line here in the middle of a pandemic. Just don't say it. Why does he feel compelled to say it? That's not part of the job description of being a butler. Tell him to go fuck off. It's just lame, stupid. I know I'm nitpicking it now, but my God, like, dude, just don't say it. I'm thinking, like, why does he feel compelled to say it? Just don't say it. Anyway, we have a quick cut to the back where the Good Brothers are there. Good Brothers, it's to the point now where it doesn't really feel like a big deal when they just sort of show up. I had people at first are like, oh, it's the Impact Invasion. And like the first week, it was, you know, kind of cool. And I don't know. They cut to the back and it's like, oh, there's the Good Brothers. They feel like they're just part of the AEW roster now. They're there with Kenny Omega. They're beating up on Penta. And Kenny removes his boot and he drives it into Penta's eye. Who is it? Who is it in the Super Chat? Oz and Glorious, right? Him with his Kenny Omega foot fetish. He was very excited. He was very turned on, apparently, by this segment. Hey, to each their own. To each their own, I will not judge. I do think a little bit less of you now, but it's okay. It's all right. Main event was the Inner Circle Tag Team Challenge. It was Chris Jericho and MJF against Santana and Ortiz. And the team of Sammy Hagar, which again is a fantastic team name. I do love that. And they had an inset promo from Sammy Hagar himself. The man himself. They got 10 seconds of Sammy Hagar cheering on Sammy Hagar. So that was cool. I guess that's Chris Jericho calling it a favor. So we cut to the middle of this. Again, MJF, for the first half of the match, was on the apron. He was not tagging in. Tony Schiavone even made a comment, this guy's just standing there, he's not tagging in. And finally, MJF tags in. But he distracted the official as Chris Jericho was going to use the baseball bat. Floyd the bat. He brought it in. Jake Hager, though, sees him with the bat, and Jake Hager just just boots him down. It's actually kind of funny. MJF tries to use the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Hager punches him right in the mouth, knocks him out. We had a running shooting star press from Sammy Guevara that got a near fall. MJF cut him off. That allowed Jericho to tag in. This is where Jericho almost killed himself on the Lion Salt. He just didn't get the full rotation. And it looked like he landed right on his forehead. Not on top of his head, but on his forehead. Like, he'd probably wake up in the morning with a bruise on his head. It reminded me of the Keith Lee spot, actually. It happened in the match. Keith Lee, was it the match with McIntyre? I don't know if it was the match with Drew McIntyre or not, but there was a spot where he hit a Spanish fly. And I'm trying to think who he hit the Spanish fly on, if it was McIntyre or somebody else. But he hit a Spanish, it might have been McIntyre. He hit a Spanish fly. And it didn't look like he got the full rotation on the move. And Keith Lee's a big guy. I mean, Chris Jericho's also a big guy these days, but Keith Lee's a lot bigger than Chris Jericho. And he landed right on his face. And I just shrieked because, you know, I mean, you're messing around with the head and the neck and all that. And it's just, you know, all that weight is not meant to come down on your face. So this is the first time I've seen Jericho come up short on the move. But again, he's getting older. He's not as light as he used to be. He's been drinking a lot of the bubbly. I'd like to see him just be a little more careful. Jericho's a smart guy. Jericho, look, when it comes to wrestling savvy, I'll say this. You could say a lot of things about Jericho's not a very smart guy in a lot of other ways. But when it comes to wrestling and in the ring stuff and everything else and how to promote himself, Jericho's a very smart, savvy guy. So if he thinks that, look, I can't, you know, maybe pull that move off the way I used to, maybe we'll, you know, kind of dial it back a little bit. I just don't want to see the guy end up like Hayabusa all those years ago. It's just one wrong move. It's such a scary thing. That's one of the worst, maybe the worst. I was just talking about the Psycho Sid leg break in WCW last week. That was the most gruesome, but the Hayabusa thing is one of the two or three worst injuries I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. And Jericho does the same move in every single match. All it takes is one wrong step, a loose rope, too much sweat on the rope. I don't want to see that happen. There was a Vader bomb in the corner by Hager to MJF. Sammy Guevara hit this high senton off the top rope onto MJF. Pinfall gets broken up by Ortiz. MJF rolls up Guevara. Now, they're running out of time. Clearly, they're running out of time. MJF rolls up Sammy with the tights for the win. I don't know if maybe they cut something else out or if this was the planned finish because they went right down to the wire. They had to get that finish in there. And so he hooks the tights. MJF gets the pin. That gives the win to Jericho and MJF. Jim Ross, I mean, they put the copyright thing on the screen, and Jim Ross is in mid-sentence, and he gets cut off. So yes, they ran out of time on this show. Sammy was the MVP of that match. I just was not impressed by the show this week. Just not a good show. There were certain good aspects to it. We went over what they were here. I just talked about them in terms of some of the storyline advancement and stuff with Private Party. I did enjoy the Layla Hirsch match, but again, on the whole, this was not a very good show. Next week, we have Eddie Kingston against Lance Archer. We've got Dax Harwood taking on Jungle Boy. Young Bucks and the Good Brothers. Back again, the Good Brothers are going to be teaming up with the Young Bucks against the Dark Order in an 8-man tag. There's another one, another 8-man tag. And Cody is going to respond to, this is going to be interesting. Cody is going to respond to Shaq's comments. The very nice comments that Shaq made when he tried to defuse the whole thing and just say that he was having fun. Those comments, I guess. He's going to respond to those comments next week. They also announced that the main event in 2 weeks, Beach Break, February 3rd, the main event is going to be Pac, Phoenix, and John Moxley. Since Penta is now out, hurt, it's going to be Moxley teaming up with Pac, who he's got history with, and Rey Fénix to take on Anderson Gallows and Kenny Omega. That's in 2 weeks. And they also very briefly announced there's no participants announced. They didn't announce a date for it. They're going to have a Women's World Championship Eliminator Tournament to crown a new number one contender to Hikaru Shida's title. So they did a world title eliminator for the men back in October and November. They're going to be doing one for the women as well. I got no issue with that. It's a great gimmick for TV. It adds a little bit of importance now to some of these women's matches. The question is, who is it going to be? I think it should be Britt Baker. I think Britt Baker should be the one who takes that title from Shida. And eventually I could see her maybe dropping the title to Thunder Rosa, maybe, you know, after she's done with it. But when I look at the landscape of heels, and look, I don't know where things stand with Jade Cargill. I don't even know how good she is in the ring. She's got a presence about her. She looks like $1 million. I'm very impressed by, you know, her look when she comes out. But can she work? Can she wrestle? Is she going to be in the Eliminator tournament? Or is she going to wrestle Cody? Maybe we're going to get Jade Cargill against Cody. I don't know. But I don't see any other heels on the women's roster right now in AEW that I would really see being the one to beat Shida. I think it should be Britt Baker. Britt Baker would be my pick. Baker's going to have a match in 2 weeks with Thunder Rosa at Beach Break. So the finish of that match could end up being important to her future. Let's see what you guys thought of this AEW show tonight. Am I alone? Nope. See, I knew I wasn't crazy. 63% thumbs up, 37% thumbs down. Look, it's a positive score, but that is way down from what a typical episode of Dynamite would do. Okay, usually it's like 80-20 when it comes to the Dynamite shows. So let's see. Is this the week that NXT beats AEW? I don't know. Let's see. 63-37 for AEW. Wow. 68-32 for NXT. NXT is beating AEW in the poll. That never happens. That never happens. So that just goes to show you. Just, you know, look. Call a spade, man. There was some good stuff on the show, but this was not a very good episode of Dynamite. And clearly, that is reflected in the Twitter polls. I'm not alone in feeling that way. So if you disagree, go vote. At Solomonster is the Twitter handle. You see it on the artwork every week. So you guys can go and let me know. Let me know what you thought of the show tonight. Going to go through some of your super chats here. I do appreciate everybody who has sent in a super chat. You guys keep this channel alive and well and healthy, and I thank you so much for that. You guys are great. All right, let's see. Where did we leave off with the foot fetish guy, Oz and Glorious? You're never going to live that down. You know that. That's your name from now on. That is your name from now on. Jacob Donnelly, what's going on, Jacob? Not a good show tonight. I don't really understand why Ortiz and Santana are taking a back seat in the inner circle. Well, I mean, it's right now the story just doesn't call for them to be in the driver's seat. I mean, that doesn't bother me so much. They should be doing more. They should be more of a featured part of the tag team division. But they're part of an ongoing story within the group. MJF is trying to cause friction within the inner circle. So that doesn't bother me so much. There's creepy Jeff Hardy. EJ, my mom doesn't like the wrestling, but she loves you and the show. Wow, look at that. We both think you're a great guy. The show was bad tonight, but today was a great day. All right, see, I'm gonna have to incorporate that into the tagline of the show. Everyone's favorite show, them and their moms. Hide your moms. The Solomonster is here. Something like that. I gotta talk to Steve. We gotta come up with a new T-shirt. Steve, if you're watching or if you're listening to this, let's brainstorm here. See, that's one thing I share in common with NXT. Is that demographic. Because, like, those are the only folks who really watch NXT. But they apparently watch the Solomonster streams as well. And I am happy to have them. I welcome everybody. I don't care if it's kids, their parents, their grandparents, their teachers, their your significant other. I have had a few people say that their significant other hates my guts because people will watch the show when they should be doing other things. So then they blame me. Don't blame me. Blame your boyfriend or your husband. It's not my fault. But watch the show. I think you might like it, even if you don't like wrestling. Off Leather Wings. I just made my debut as a referee, being a weekly listener of yours since 2013 after Zayn against Cesaro on NXT. Oh, that was a fucking great match. Was that the one where he propelled him up into the air for the uppercut? Oh, that's one of my favorite matches from NXT. Thanks for keeping my wrestling interest for so many years. You and good mic work, he says hello. Greg, good mic work. Greg's a good guy. I met Greg on the Jericho Cruise a year ago, actually. I what's today, the 20th? I believe exactly 1 year ago today, I was on the high seas. I was probably hanging out with Greg 1 year ago today. We were having a blast. I was all dressed up as Orange Cassidy. People legitimately thought I was Orange Cassidy. Not everybody, but some people tapping me on the shoulder. Is it you? Then I would give the weak thumbs up. I took pictures with a lot of people. I don't know what happened to all those pictures. I know I took pictures with a lot of people that week, though. Man, I can't believe that was a fun cruise, too. Probably the last one I'll ever be on, but that was, if it is, that was a good one to go out with. Ken terminated by DQ with the $5. When you mentioned the six-man tag titles, did you mention the titles from World Class? I know you aren't a Kerry fan, but the Freebirds, Von Erichs are gold. No, I didn't mention that because I actually forgot about that, but that's a good point. Yeah, I mean, look, they've got so many teams. They've got so many factions in this company, and every week with the multi-man matches. So you could absolutely have a solid trios division in this company. And I'm not usually a fan of adding titles. They have plenty of titles as it is. They have the FTW title, which doesn't even get defended. But I think trios belts would work. It worked in Lucha Underground. It could work here, too. You know, other companies, it might not work because they don't have all of these three-man groups where they have way too many titles as it is. In AEW, it just feels like it's just inevitable. It's only a matter of time. Only a matter of time. The cheeseburger. Team Sammy Hager's new theme, I Can't Drive 55. What was that? Back to the Future 2, right? They played that song in Back to the Future 2. When they flashed into the future to show us when Biff was the president. Oz and Glorious, foot fetish guy. The Jade Cargill angle is lame. But she is sexy, let's be honest. Oh, look, I have said that she is a very, she's a very beautiful woman. She's in tremendous shape because she comes from the world of fitness and bodybuilding. And so obviously she keeps her body in great shape and absolutely. And I can see why they want her to be on TV. It's a very, you know, visual, very cosmetic industry. I can understand why they would want her on TV. I just said I haven't seen her actually work. I don't know if she can wrestle. I don't know what experience level she has. I don't think it's great. So when she ends up in the ring, maybe she'll impress me. But I have no concept of whether or not she can work a wrestling match. Tenorio, are you a fan of the movie Airplane? Of course. Who's not a fan of the movie Airplane? It's a classic. The True Heel Master. I hate to say it. Cody and Brandy announcing their pregnancy reveal. I lost all interest in the Shaq-Cody Rhodes storyline feud. It is beyond repairable or reparable. What feud? I'm still wondering what feud. Did I miss something? there is no feud. Whatever feud there may have been, Shaq killed it a few weeks ago. That was the end of it. So I don't know what feud you're even talking about. Oz and Glorious, this Charles Taylor Butler angle gave me the warm fuzzies by reminding me of Mr. Belvedere. Oh, Mr. Belvedere. Starring Miro as George Owens. Man, Mr. Belvedere was one of my favorite sitcoms when I was younger. That was in the rotation of the shows that I would watch back then. It was Mr. Belvedere, Perfect Strangers, The Jeffersons, Night Court. Man, TV was fucking great, right? Back in the 80s. Mr. Belvedere. Bob Uecker was on that show. Bob Uecker was at a couple of WrestleManias. Bob Uecker is in the WWE Hall of Fame. There's your wrestling tie-in. Mr. Belvedere, though, is not. Mr. Belvedere is not in the Hall of Fame. Hashway with the 10 bucks. Listening internationally. What's going on, Hashway? Listening to you since CM Punk's pipe bomb back in 2011. I missed a couple of episodes of the podcast, but I am just glad I can finally support. Always good to see Hashway joining us from halfway around the world. Oz, look, they were killer boots regardless of whose feet they're on. Thank you for being a friend, Reekinson. The True Heel Master, I finally realized that Sting and Darby Allin pairing up together reminds me of Bruce Wayne and Terry McGinnis from Batman Beyond. I thought you were going to say Batman and Robin. You know what? That is kind of what they look like. That's what they look like. Batman and Robin. If Batman and Robin had face paint, Batman and Robin had masks. Instead, these guys have face paint. It's true. Sting is like Bruce Wayne, and Darby is Dick. Derek Myers with $20. Thank you for the $20, man. That's awesome. Thank you for all that you do. Can you shout out my buddy Nick and his newborn daughter, Josie? He is a huge fan. Hope you are staying safe. Shout out to Nick and Josie. So is this his first daughter, second daughter? I hear raising a girl is, it's an amazing experience, but once they start to grow up a little bit, when they're still relatively young, it's a lot harder, apparently, to raise a girl than it is a boy. Or so I've been told. I guess it all depends on the child, though, right? Well, good luck with that, Nick. Good luck with that. He didn't even tell me the girl's name. Oh, he did. Josie. It's late. Don't hold it again. See, I'm botching just like everybody else botched on the show tonight. Now I'm botching. See, now we all have something in common. Vahelix, would you like to see an all-women's AEW dark show in March for International Women's Day? No, I don't think that's necessary. It sounds like they're the world title eliminator, maybe they could time that in March. I don't have any interest in seeing an all-women's show in AEW. I don't think the division is strong enough to support it. Me personally, no. I don't have any interest in that. Am I seeing you in Dallas for a Mania meetup? I wish, man. I wish. Probably not. I think my WrestleMania days are over for now. Until they go to Vegas or New Orleans. That's what I said when I talked about the WrestleMania news the other day. If they bring WrestleMania 40 to New York, or back to New Orleans, or to Vegas, I will be there. Dallas, though, because I know that's where Food Hive is, and probably not. Probably not going to happen. One and only. Are Trios titles the only way to save Team Taz? I feel like I still haven't seen anything from Will Hobbs still. Yeah, he should be featured a little bit more. He's been a little too quiet lately. They were doing a good job with him, too. He was the only member of Team Taz who was trying to stand up to Sting a month ago. They had to hold the guy back. I suspect that he will have a role, though, in whatever that cinematic, if they do something cinematic with them and Sting and Darby, that he'll have a role in that. But yeah, he's kind of just been standing there, not really doing much recently. And Oz says, you just reminded me of the TGIF lineup, the Wonder Years, and Pete and Pete. The 80s were indeed the best. Yeah, TGIF was my thing back then, man. TGIF used to be Full House, Family Matters, Perfect Strangers, and Step by Step. And then I think it changed. There was some lame show called Going Places. I don't even remember who was on it. Yeah, they ended up butchering the whole lineup. But that was my Friday, basically. It was TGIF from 8 to 10. Four shows in a row. And none of this DVR shit where you can just let it record, you watch it whenever. No, you had to watch. You had to sit there and watch all of the shows. I was all about that. Food Hive says, Solomonster looks like the judge from Night Court. So you're saying I look like Judge Harold T. Stone. You know, it's really a shame that, what was his last name? Harry, the guy who played him, I just forgot his last name. He passed away a few years ago. And recently I read that John Larroquette, who is Dan Fielding, great fucking character on Night Court, is getting his own show as the Dan Fielding character. And I'm like, oh man, Harry's not here anymore. Harry can't be on the show. It's too bad. You know, he can at least maybe make cameos on there. But yeah, I'm very much interested to see where that goes. John Larroquette bringing back Dan Fielding. So that should be fun. The Tree Hill Master. Terry McGinnis is the new Batman in the DC Universe. Sting is Bruce Wayne. And Darby Allin is Terry McGinnis and not Robin, the new Batman. No, I don't. Look, I'm telling you. I don't care about that. I wasn't asking you. I was telling you. I look at them, and Sting reminds me of Batman, and Darby is like his little sidekick. He's Robin. I wasn't asking you. I was telling you. That's all I'm going to see now when I see them. It's going to be Batman and Robin. Alex Jimenez, this Florida man was at the show. Go little Brody. That was a fun moment, though. I did enjoy them doing something nice for his birthday. Again, it's just horrible. The timing of everything is just, look, you gotta put a smile on the kid's face somehow. Obviously, he loves being there. All these guys are like his adopted brothers now. And he's not going to be there every week, but, you know, for the kid's birthday, why not? And not for nothing. He's a pretty good promo. For a 9-year-old, he's a pretty good promo. I think he's definitely got a future. Let me see. I think I caught up on everybody. EJ. Boy Meets World was my go-to show. There he is. There's the Tribal Queen. Roman Reigns, or Romana. I love that super chat. But EJ says, Boy Meets World was my go-to show on TGIF. I still watch it on Disney Plus. Yeah, I tried watching, was a Girl Meets World. They did some kind of recent one like a few years ago. It got canceled. It was all right. I mean, you know, it wasn't like the original. Boy Meets World was good. I enjoyed Boy Meets World. Mr. Feeny. I think Mr. Feeny is still alive. I would love to. How old is Mr. Feeny? I don't remember the guy's name. He was fucking old even then. I think he's still alive. Hey, some people just, they defy nature. Look at Betty White. She just turned 99 years old. Betty White is a national treasure. She turned 99 years old on Sunday. May she live another 99. Maybe by then they'll be able to extend life, and they can extend Betty White's life. She's the last of the Golden Girls who were around. I used to think to myself, maybe like mid-2000s, mid to late 2000s, I think all of the Golden Girls were still alive. Estelle Getty was the first one to go. And ironically, Estelle Getty, I think, was the youngest of them all, even though on the show she was supposed to be the oldest. But like all the other members were still alive, and I remember thinking that's pretty cool, I guess. Like it's kind of surprising that, you know, they were older then and they were still alive. And then just one after the other, B. Arthur passed away, Rue McClanahan passed away, and Betty White is the only one left. Golden Girls is another one. I didn't watch that when I was a kid, because why the fuck would I watch the Golden Girls? My grandmother used to watch it. I had no interest in watching it. And it wasn't until I was in college and they aired episodes all the time on Lifetime. I'd be flipping around when there was nothing on in my dorm. And actually, I think the first time I might have stumbled on it, we were sitting in our suite, because we had the two rooms and then we had a suite. And there were a few girls with us, and it was probably them. They were probably watching Lifetime, because that's what women did or do. They would watch those stupid Lifetime movies. It was always the guy. The guy was evil. The guy was a horrible person. He beat his girlfriend, or he was a rapist, or he was a kidnapper. It was always like, you know, the men were bad in those movies. But we had Lifetime on, and they would always show the Golden Girls. And as I started to watch the show, I realized this show's pretty funny. So I stuck with it, and now I've seen every episode. And it's one of the best sitcoms ever made. The writing on the show is fantastic. So, anybody knocking the Golden Girls, you're going to have to come talk to me. Because that is a great fucking show. They don't make them like that anymore. Neil, what movies have you been watching? I've been a fan with the Golden Age era. What movies have I been watching? Oh my God. Well, I have a whole watch list of movies that I have to catch up with, Joker being one of them. There's actually a movie I'm going to watch this in the next couple of days. My cousin told me about this movie, and I can't believe I never heard of it. I never saw it. It's a movie called Soylent Green. I think it's probably early to mid-1970s. And I already know the payoff. Unfortunately, it was kind of spoiled for me, so I know what the big, like, ending of the movie is, but I've never seen it. I think Charlton Heston's in it. I want to see it. I feel like I should have seen this so many years ago, and I never did, so I want to watch Soylent Green. There's another movie, by the way, before I get to the next Super Chat. Speaking of these older movies, there is a movie, if you are into... I guess it would be kind of like sci-fi, kind of. It was made in 1971. I really enjoyed it, called The Andromeda Strain. If you've never heard of that movie, look it up. Read the synopsis, see if you would like it. I'm a big fan of that movie, and I had seen it mentioned recently, and it jogged my memory. So that's another one, The Andromeda Strain. I think it was probably made around the same time Soylent Green was made. Yeah. We got Dick Tickles in the chat, just giving it away, just giving the whole plot away. Don't spoil it for people. What's the matter with you? What is the matter with you? EJ says Mr. Feeney is 94, and Topanga still loves wrestling. Yeah, Topanga is a huge wrestling fan. She's a huge Leo Rush fan. She's followed him from his independent days to WWE, and now I think he's in MLW. So Mr. Feeney is 94, so he's only 5 years younger than Betty White. We got to get the two of them to hook up. Well, is Mr. Feeney married? I don't know, his wife might not like that. Maybe we can get Mr. Feeney and Betty White to kind of come together, you know? Oofman Entertainment, William Daniels played Mr. Feeney, who also voiced Kit from Knight Rider. Mr. Daniels is 93, alive and well. Well, as well as you can, let's be honest. I mean, as well as you can be at 93. I hope he's doing well, but I mean, the fucking guy's 93, so. True Heel Master, have you ever watched Mortal Kombat Annihilation? No, I have not. I have not. You know what? That's another movie. I am going to put that on my watch list as well. Not Mortal Kombat. I have not. It's been so long since I've seen the original... Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, the first one. First one's a really good movie. I forget the Secret of the Ooze and the third one and all that. The first one was dark, brooding. It was a good movie. And it's been so many years since I've seen it. You mentioning Mortal Kombat made me think of that. I gotta go back and I gotta watch it. I gotta watch the original again. Man, I got all these things I gotta watch and I have no time. Because all I do is watch wrestling. I have to watch all this wrestling so I can do a show. And I don't have time for anything else. But I will add that to my list. Quintus Brown, do you think this Kenny Omega Tama Tonga beef is all a work? Yes, I do. I've gotten some emails about that. Tama Tonga went on his podcast and he was... It absolutely came across to me as a work shoot. Look, never say never, I guess. But yes, I think it's a total shoot or a total work, I should say. Juan Ocampo, are you growing the fro back? Cameron Grant. No, I just got a haircut last week. You got to go. If you go back and watch some of those streams from like May of last year, April, May. That's my fro. I don't ever want to go back to that. That was awful. That was terrible. Take a look at what you guys are talking about in the chat. Alex Moreno says, Sting appears in title. I don't watch AEW, but doesn't he appear every week? Yes, he does, and he shouldn't. He is on the show every single week. But the fact is, Sting is a draw. And so if you put, you know, if you mention Sting in the title, or if you put Sting in the thumbnail, which I was going to do anyway because he was promoted for the show, then people are more likely to click on it because they're a big fan of Sting. As opposed to me putting a picture of, say, you know, Chuck the Butler or Peter Avalon, you know how many clicks and views that's going to get? Zero, because nobody gives a shit. But if Sting is being promoted for the same show, then yes, you are going to mention Sting, or you are going to mention Kenny Omega, or you are going to mention, Impact Invasion or whatever the big thing is on the show that week. Tenorio, Turtlehead. Do you think they mailed it in because of the inauguration? Also, I love Layla. The chat should know that. Thanks for the continued excellence. No, I don't think that had it. Look, if you are booking your shows with the idea that we're going to mail it in because there's something else going on. You know what? There's something going on every week. Every single Wednesday for the last 3 weeks, there's been something going on. Right? We had fucking riots and insurrections going on. We have an inauguration going on. We have this. There's something going on every week. Or if there's a college championship game, you don't mail it in. I don't think that's what they did. If it is, then shame on them. You don't mail it in. You put the best show forward that you possibly can. If there's a big match that you want to promote, and you think, okay, the numbers for the show might be down this week, all right, save that match for the next week. I don't want a promotion, though, to mail it in. I'm sitting here. You're sitting here for 2 hours, right? Devoting your time to watching the show. You want to find out, oh, they mailed it in because something else was going on today? I just think that they have Beach Break coming up, and, you know, they're saving a lot of their good stuff for Beach Break. Unfortunately, it made for one of their weaker shows that they've done in a very long time. I thought the show was no good. On the whole, I thought the show was no good. It had moments, but this was not one of their better weeks. Food Hive. Turtles 3 is to me what Halloween 3 is to you. My favorite movie ever is Ex Machina on Netflix. I have no idea what that's about. What is Ex Machina about? FTW Production says, I personally think that AEW doing the women's title eliminator tournament with just US and Joshi talent is a mistake. What about women like Layla Hirsch or possibilities of UK talent like Kimberly? When you start getting into international talent, a lot of it is going to depend on travel, right? And travel restrictions, or if they can get here, can they get back? I can't speak to what's going on as far as Japan and the UK and how difficult that might be for them. So I'm not going to hold them to account for that. KC, hey, Salamaster, did you hear about Jason Jordan training to get back into the ring? I think the quote from Chad Gable, did he say that he was training? I thought he just said he was trying to make a comeback, which I think is great. If he can make a comeback, I would love an American Alpha reunion. I think that would be fantastic. I mean, I think they broke those guys up way too soon. You know, Jordan was showing flashes of greatness in that little singles run that he had. He's still a young guy. If he's able to make it back, look, Edge came back after 9 years away. Everybody thought he was done. Edge probably thought he was done because they told him, we're not going to clear you, and now Edge is back. So never say never. I think we will see Jason Jordan back in the ring at some point, and if he's in the process of training and he can make it back in the next, I don't know, maybe sometime this year, then I think that would be fantastic. I am the best, 237. Ben Hamin put you over on his podcast, Jason. Did he? I didn't hear about that. You'll have to point me to the episode or the timestamp where it happened. That's the first I'm hearing of it. But if that's true, I appreciate that. I do indeed. Neil wants to know, what are your thoughts on The Exorcist? Never saw it. I've seen clips. I've seen the head spinning and the vomit and everything. I've never seen it. And I like horror movies. I've never seen it. I can't tell you why, so I can't comment. The True Heel Master, AEW has handled Sting very well, so there's no need for me to call Sting cool, fresh, and hip anymore. So it was you. I couldn't remember who it was. So you're actually reminding me of the fact that you were the one who made that comment. But hey, as long as you're enjoying the Sting appearances, then that's all that matters. EJ says, can we say the same thing about Tyson Kidd? Will he ever be cleared? No, that I am pretty confident in saying that will never happen. His situation was very, very scary. It's amazing to think that he's even walking, let alone alive right now. Because they said 95% of the people that have the injury he has end up dead. He should not be alive right now, let alone walking around and training and doing all of the things that he does. I mean, look into his injury. Do some research and look up the written accounts of his actual injury, or him talking about his injury and his neck and his spinal cord. For him to even think about getting back into the ring again, I'm sure he's thought about it. I'm sure he would love to one day be able to do it. I don't see how that's possible. And I don't see how WWE would ever even allow it. But I would think he's not dumb enough to do it. There's no point. He has created a great career for himself now. I mean, everybody raves about him. Whenever the wrestlers talk publicly about him and the work he does as an agent in the back, especially with the women, they rave about Tyson Kidd. Bayley was on the Broken Skull Sessions with Austin, just watched that last week, and she had nothing but fantastic things to say about the work that he does. So he's got a new career for himself now. I don't understand why you would risk everything, why you would risk your health, your mobility. The injury he had, he should be dead right now. So him being back in the ring, I'm going to say, they say never say never. I'm going to say never. On that one, I'm going to say never. That was a devastating injury. And a Food Hive. Let's see. It's about a coder winning a vacation to his boss's house in Switzerland, and he created an AI that is so real it's crazy. All right. It's on Netflix, he says. I might have to check that out. Ex Machina. We might have to do that. I'm always about the movie recommendations. So if you've got any for me that you think maybe I haven't seen, by all means, run them by me. DB Toys, though, says The Girl on the Third Floor is the worst horror movie of all time. Wasn't that the CM Punk movie? I did not hear reviews for that, so if that's the CM Punk movie, then that's not good. That is not a good thing. All right, again, if you missed it before, guys, the AEW poll looks very different this week than it normally does. 64% thumbs up, 36% thumbs down. And NXT is actually beating out AEW. And if you know anything about these streams and when I talk about these Twitter polls, that is a rare thing. So, look, not every week can be a home run. Clearly this wasn't for AEW. And one can only hope that next week they have a better show, because I was not impressed by this week's show. True Heel Master with another super chat. Every time Angel Garza has a rose in his hand, I feel like he is auditioning for ABC's The Bachelor. Yeah, I mean, Angel Garza is another one of those guys who, you know, has a lot of potential and just feels completely directionless right now. Like he's just stuck in a rut. They have nothing. But the problem is, you look up and down the WWE roster right now, especially on that Raw brand, right? I think Garza is still... Is Garza still technically a Raw guy, or is he a SmackDown guy? Because I still think of him as a Raw guy. Whether it's him, or whether it's Ricochet, whether it's Aleister Black, it pisses me off. Especially a guy like Aleister Black, who had so much potential and could have been something special on that roster. If you go back and you watch when he was first called up from NXT, and here we are now. And I don't even think has it been a full 2 years, because I think it was 2 years ago in March when he and Ricochet had their send off in NXT. It hasn't even been a full 2 years, and they have completely just ruined this man's career. And it is an indictment on the company. It is an indictment on the people who are running the creative end of that company, and we know who those people are. That you have talent like a Ricochet, like an Aleister Black. You have guys like an Andrade or an Angel Garza who are doing nothing. Nothing. And as a fan, it drives me up a wall, because these are guys who can be contributing right now to the shows, and maybe they would make the shows more tolerable if they were on the shows and if they had stories, well thought out stories for them, and they're just kind of there. They collect talent the way that some wrestling fans collect belts or Funko Pops. Vince McMahon collects talent. And he puts them on a shelf and they collect dust. And every now and then he'll dust them off, put them on TV, give them something to do. And then they go right back on the shelf. They're like his shiny new toys until he gets distracted by the next shiny object. And then all of a sudden, they fall out of favor with him and they go back on the shelf. And this is a story as old as time, it feels like. And it is infuriating to see. And it's even more infuriating when you hear that some of these guys signed 5-year contracts. So a Ricochet and an Aleister Black, they may be locked down for another 3 years. They may not be able to go anywhere. So they sit. And these are their prime earning years. These guys are in their early 30s, mid-30s, and they are just wasting away. Wasting away. So I don't apologize for being upset when I go off on stuff like that, because I feel bad. I feel bad for them, and it shouldn't be that way. As a fan, it's infuriating. It should not be that way. I just saw a story today about new recruits to the PC. Priscilla Kelly, I see, is in this new class of talent they just recruited. There's been rumors of different NXT call-ups soon. Damian Priest, who's probably going to be on SmackDown on Friday night. I think that's who Rey Mysterio was referring to. When he said the other week that he was going to bring somebody in to help out with Baron Corbin, to go after Corbin. There's rumors about him. There's rumors about Rhea Ripley. I worry about anybody who is being called from NXT to Raw or SmackDown. I fear for their future. May God have mercy. May the wrestling gods have mercy on their souls. Fucking embarrassment. Shameful. Shameful. Neil Child says, movie live stream every few months. I don't know how that would work. I don't think I wouldn't be able to show it. But more movie type stuff. I mean, I'm down if there's an interest in it. I'm always down for new ideas. If the interest level has to be there. If the interest level isn't there, then I'm not going to waste my time. Lord Frieza, Solomonster, it's time for a mid fade. Me, I don't know about that. I don't know that a fade would work. Maybe like one of those mushroom bowl haircuts. What about that? Used to have my hair spiked. I had spiked hair many years ago. All right, guys, this has been fun. I always enjoy taking your questions. Thank you for all of the. We still have super chats coming in, so we'll stick around here for another minute. Slurex with the $10 drop. Finally done with COVID and back to the regular work schedule. Can't wait to catch up on the sound off while cleaning pools. Thanks for all the work you put in, Jason. Look at this. We got the pool boy writing into the sound off. Look at that. How about that? Who is that who wrote in a little bit earlier who said that his mom is a fan of the show too? Maybe we can get the mom together with the pool boy. See, I'm like a matchmaker here, man. I'm trying to put people together. Mr. Feeney and Betty White. I might have a little side hustle going on here. Matchmaking, right? I mean, during a pandemic, people can't exactly go out, go hang out at bars and clubs. And, well, I guess in some places you can, but you got to meet people somehow. Get the Solomonster matchmaking service going on here. Matching happy couples together. Daniel Andrew, would you do a WWE versus AEW draft? Mets had a week. Yeah, the Mets had a week, all right. The Mets pulled a Mets this week. They hired a general manager, and then they fired a general manager, and they have no general manager. Although, I guess, how could they have known, right? That all that text messaging stuff. But it is definitely another in a long line of Mets stories over the years. Would I do a WWE versus AEW, like a fantasy mock draft? I don't have time for that. That's a lot of work, though. You gotta go through the whole rosters, and I don't know. What purpose would that serve? I could tell you what talent I think both companies should go after. I don't really have any interest in WWE going after AEW talent right now because I have no faith that they would know what to do with them. How sad is that? I don't want anybody going to WWE. And I watch more WWE than any other product, and yet I'm terrified for these people. That's why I said weeks ago, and I'll say it all year long, Vince McMahon needs to resign. Not from the company. He needs to resign as the head creative force in WWE. Step aside. I'll say it every week. I'll make that my new sign-off on every show. Vince McMahon must resign. He doesn't have it anymore. He used to, but he doesn't anymore. It's time for a fresh pair of eyes and a fresh vision. But hey, Slurex, I'm glad that you're over COVID, man. I'm glad you're doing well. I'm glad you're feeling good. Priscilla Kelly will be like Paige, says the True Heel Master. What does that mean? She's going to suffer a horrible neck injury and have to retire early? I mean, they look a little bit alike. I kind of see that, but I mean, do they wrestle the same? I don't think so. Yeah, you know, Robbie Burns says, who taught Triple H what he knows? Just think about it. Look, Triple H, for the people who think Triple H is going to be the savior of WWE, I wouldn't necessarily go that far. I think he deserves a shot because I know he's a wrestling fan. He's an old school wrestling fan. All the things that Vince McMahon didn't want to do and didn't want to bring back, Triple H did in NXT. He brought back the Great American Bash. He did War Games when Vince McMahon would never do War Games. He finally got Halloween Havoc done. So I have faith, but you're right. Triple H could be Vince McMahon 2.0. We don't know. We don't know. I think his body of work with NXT, it gives me reason to be optimistic. But you're right. You know, you're right. He could take over one day and, you know, feel that things are done on the main roster a certain way because they have to be done that way, and we could be right back where we were before. You got to have some faith. Dreadlocks. Yeah, that's not going to work with me. That's not going to work. Well, who am I, Road Dog? No dreadlocks for me. What about Shane? I don't know. The stories I've heard about Shane and some of his creative ideas, probably not a good idea. Triple H will get rid of Kevin Dunn, which is good. Yeah, I hear that there's... Kevin Dunn's days are numbered if Vince McMahon ever steps aside. Kevin Dunn is a Vince McMahon guy. I don't think he would be there very long if Vince went away. Stephanie is worse. That's what Ken Terminated says. Stephanie is Vince with long hair. I mean, it's crazy how much they look alike. She basically, that's what she is. She's Vince McMahon with hair. Long hair. If Vince McMahon was a very attractive woman, he would look like Stephanie. They look very much alike. Shane very much looks like his mom, and Stephanie looks like her father. Which is why it was always creepy as fuck whenever Vince would do some of these segments on TV with Stephanie where he was looking at her breasts. I mean, clearly looking at her breasts. But then again, this is the same guy who tried for so long to do an incest storyline. I don't think we should be surprised by anything like that. Yes, both have strong jaws, according to Turtlehead. It is, right? It is the jaw. I think it's the jawline. I don't know if she has the dimple that Vince has in his chin. All right, guys. I'm going to head out of here. This has been fun. I hope you enjoyed the review more than I enjoyed Dynamite tonight. Hopefully they'll have a rebound week next week. Beach break in a couple of weeks sounds fun. I assume that's going to be from Daly's place, but maybe they can get some kind of beach theme going on, get some pools. Remember when WCW had those Club La Vila shows, the spring break shows? I'd love for them to do it up like that in some way. We'll see. Beach break is in 2 weeks, but I'm going to be back with you next Wednesday for next week's episode of Dynamite. This Sunday, episode 689. No, I'm sorry, 688. I'm going to get ahead of myself. 688 of the Sound Off. This is a big history segment coming up on the show this week. A lot of shit happened this week. A lot of really historically significant shit happened this week. And no, I'm not just talking about that Royal Rumble. That plus all the news of the week on Sunday. I do hope that you will download and stream wherever you usually download and stream. And by the way, hit the like button on this video. Hit the sub button if you are not subscribed to the channel. I don't mention that enough, but that like button does help the video get recommended on the sidebar. So on your way out, hit that like button. Be well. Stay safe. And I'll see you again next Wednesday for more Dynamite. Take care, guys.